The next case on calendar this morning is Wynn versus the Associated Press, case number 77708. Are counsel prepared to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Bowman?
Yes, Your Honor.
And Mr. Bice, do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I do, Madam Justice. 3 minutes.
Very well. You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the Court, Madam Chief Justice, for Todd Bice on behalf of the people. The order on appeal from the District Court, as urged by the Associated Press, sets a wildly dangerous standard if it is allowed to stand as the law of the state of Nevada. And that is not hyperbole by me. One has to look no further than what the Associated Press told the District Court at page 240 of the Joint Appendix. The AP said that if the police are given or take in a statement, even as a courtesy, of any alleged wrongdoing, unless the police take that statement and throw it in the trash, it becomes an official government proceeding whereby the republication of which becomes perfect. Indeed, the Associated Press below at the District Court said that that privilege to republish such naked accusations was in fact absolute, even if done with known fault, even if it was done knowingly with false. And what is more under the approach that they urged the District Court, and which the District Court seemingly accepted, is that the republication can omit material aspects of the report, aspects that undermine its core premise and increase and exacerbate the gist. That is why on this appeal we have asked that the District Court's decision be reversed for two reasons. The first is that such a voluntary statement given to law enforcement are not an actual official proceeding or record of government proceedings so as to trigger the fair report privilege as recognized in Statement Section 611. And as this court recognized in Wynn versus Smith. And even if this court were to accept such a far-reaching scope of the privilege, on the record here, it was abused by the Associated Press. They omitted key aspects of Mikuta's statement to law enforcement, and those omissions, again, escalated the gist and sting of the defamatory statements. Let me come to the first point. This court should not recognize, under Section 611, that such naked statements to law enforcement constitute an official proceeding so as to trigger the privilege. Doing so is completely at odds with this court's precedent in Wynn versus Smith, as well as the express terms of the restatement section 611, most notably comment H. I would remind the court of Mikva's statements in Dameron versus Washington magazine, which this court cited authoritatively. Judge Mikva's point was, the intended beneficiary of this privilege is the public, not the press. The privilege is not simply a convenient means of shielding the media from tort liability, as he said. His point is a simple one, and it's one that this court has also confirmed in Wynn versus Smith. This privilege is about the public knowing what the government is doing and what the government is saying. It is not about knowing what someone just walking in off the street says to someone else in the government.
Mr. Bice, this is Justice Hardesty. May I interrupt your argument?
Of course.
So in subsection D of the restatement of 611, proceedings is discussed, and it includes or any action taken by any officer or agency of the government of the United States or any state or any subdivision, any of its subdivisions.
Yes.
Isn't it of interest to the public what action Metro takes or fails to take with respect to the receipt of the CUPTA statements? In this instance, is a twofold question. Secondly, in this instance, my understanding is that Metro referred the report to Chicago police authorities. One could characterize that act, I suppose, as an action taken by the Metro Police Department. But in any event, even if one doesn't characterize it in that fashion, does it constitute or should this section extend to inaction by government authorities where they should have acted? The point you were just making earlier has to do with, and the purpose behind these privileges relates to the public's understanding of what a government agency is doing or not doing.
So Justice Hardesty, let me deal with those in order in which you presented it. Subsection D does indeed, of the comments, does indeed talk about reports of official proceedings. But of course, the restatement, like all provisions, has to be read as a whole. There is a specific call out in subsection H that deals with police reports or raw data police report. Consider, for example, applying that standard to Wynn versus Smith. Wynn versus Smith involved an actual government report, shoddy as it may have been. But it was nonetheless, it was the product of investigatory work. It was the product of government officials. And this court said it is not within the scope of the privilege because it was, in fact, confidential as declared by the government because the government, it was of a quality that the government did not want to associate its name with. This statement, a written statement that is simply given to the police, has no law, no government sanction, no government investigation. It is no different. If she had walked in and simply handed them a piece of paper that contained all the same information. So, no, I do not believe that that is an official proceeding or that this court should recognize it as falling within the scope of the restatement. Think about the consequences of that analysis under subsection H of the restatement, common H, Justice Hardesty. Under the AP's assertion, a report that does not lead to an arrest is privileged. But if the report actually leads to an arrest, the statement says the underlying allegations that were prompted the police to make the arrest are not covered by the privilege. That would make the law totally absurd. With respect to your second point, actually the only thing in the record about allegedly forwarding this statement on to the Chicago Police Department is a statement that I think is quite telling, and this is not what the AP reported on. It's an email from the Metropolitan Police Department's Chief Information Officer that characterizes this report as a courtesy report. They took in, according to their own words, a courtesy report, and they said they would forward it on to the Chicago Police Department. In fact, the only evidence in the record on that issue comes from the Review Journal's reporting, which says that the Chicago Police Department knew nothing about it and had never received any such report. So in this particular, I think the record is very telling. It was that even by the police's own characterization, they merely took a courtesy statement from a witness. And that courtesy statement is not an official proceeding of any sort. And as the Associated Press said, Your Honor, unless the police throw it in the trash, I guess that everything is privileged. Think about the consequences of that and the myriad of ways in which people give information to law enforcement. Anonymous hotlines, Crime Stoppers. The police transcribe those statements all the time. 911 calls, those are all public records under Nevada law. In other words, they can be released to the public. Under the AP's approach, every piece of information within the Metropolitan Police Department somehow becomes an official proceeding by which they can republish it, even under their version, with knowledge of falsity.
Mr. Bice?
Yes?
It's my understanding that you're not challenging the applicability of the privilege to the actual press release made by Metro, the contents of that, to the extent it said reports were taken, you know, we're not investigating it, things like that. Is that true?
That is correct, because that actually is the official statement of law enforcement. They issued an actual statement, a public statement, and reporting on that is fair game. But you'll notice what the police didn't say. The police didn't say anything about a child being the product of a rape, and that's not an accident. And that's why I'd like to turn with the limited time that I have to the next point that we raised, which is that the privilege was abused, as evidenced by the record already. As this court said in Lubins versus Kunin, the media's reporting, if they want to claim the privilege, must either be accurate and complete or a fair abridgment. The summary cannot create more of a defamatory impression than the original. So under that standard, as this court has said, the issue is, could the finder of fact conclude that the omissions conveyed a greater sting than the original defamatory statement of Ms. Kuda? And on this record, Your Honors, I would submit that the AP has admitted as much. The AP acknowledges that this fact because it resorts to characterizing the fantastical birth scenario as somehow being collateral to its reporting. With all due respect, the existence of the child is the lead of their article. The lead of their article is a woman told police she had a child with casino mogul Steve Wynn after he raped her. The existence of this child precedes the allegation of rape. And in fact, the article goes on to emphasize that the child is alive and living in Las Vegas. What would readers conclude from that statement? The child's existence is corroboration of the rape allegation. You don't have to watch Jerry Springer to understand in this era about DNA testing. If there is in fact a living child, and it is confirmation of at least one sexual encounter between the accuser and the accused, if it is true, that child's existence is central to the corroboration. Indeed, it is the only supposed corroboration that this story emphasizes. And here's what the Associated Press never wants to address. Why was it omitted? Why were those details omitted when they included so many other salacious details? I would submit that it was omitted and that a reasonable reader and a reasonable finder of fact would conclude that that omission was because the fanciful story about a pink doll being born or dropping out in a thick water bag and the mother tearing it out by or open with her teeth and blowing in its face would lead people to realize that the child wasn't real. And if the child isn't real, the corroboration isn't real. And it casts the entire rape allegation in a far different light. And the AP knows that, the reporter knew that, and that's why it was omitted. And a finder of fact could so conclude. And with that, I will reserve the remainder of my time, unless the court has questions.
Thank you. Mr. Bowman.
May it please the court, Chad Bowman on behalf of the Associated Press and its reporter, Regina Garcia Cano. This case is about the scope and application of the fair report privilege in Nevada. I want to raise an overarching point, though, before I respond to the specific arguments about the scope and the application of the privilege. There's a reason that every state in this country has a version of the fair report privilege. In a democracy, our people need to know what the government is doing. As the U.S. Supreme Court noted in the Cox Broadcasting case, public records, by their very nature, are of interest to those concerned with the administration of government. This court has applied the privilege in four modern cases. In the first, Sahara Gaming, the court explained that the public's right to know is paramount to the fact that someone might occasionally make false or malicious statements. In other words, the privilege to discuss official reports, records, and actions is not a technicality. The privilege is central to the functioning of the democracy. So let's turn to the application of the privilege and the scope of the privilege. On the scope, Mr. Wynn argues that the privilege should not apply to police complaints. And he cites the restatement, but he cites the wrong section of the restatement. I mean, comment D says clearly that the filing of a report by an officer or agency of the government is an action bringing the reporting of the government report within the scope of the privilege. This was a report, complaint filed by someone who came into the police office. Section H, comment H, has been understood to apply to informal comments by police, not the actual arrest record, not the official report, but, you know, the officer at the scene giving comments about what happened. Informal oral communications. This was not that. This was a police report.
Mr. Bowman?
Yes, Your Honor.
Justice Kadish here in Carson City. Can I ask, do you have any cases from any of our state or federal courts, and I mean across the country, recognizing the fair report privilege in the context where someone like this submits a police report, a statement of some kind, without any police follow-up investigation or confirmation or the like, and where fair report privilege was recognized?
I do, Your Honor, although it's something like proving a negative, because in most cases you could look hard and find some police action, as in fact you can in this case. But in the Arkansas Supreme Court, in the Whiteside case, Whiteside versus Russellville Newspapers case in 2009, had a situation where the press had access to they were given access to the police database. And after an incident occurred, they went into the AEGIS database and saw the witness statements, reported on the witness statements, and were sued. And the plaintiff made the same argument. These were simple witness statements made to police. These weren't any sort of official action. And the Arkansas Supreme Court looked to Comment D of Section 611 about the filing of a report qualifying, and said the filing of a report by an officer or agency of the government is an action bringing the reporting of the government within the scope of the privilege. The Alabama Supreme Court, in the Wilson case, involved a situation in which Cuban refugees told police about alleged mistreatment by their sponsor. The news story recounted their allegations. But the thing also to remember here is that really what Mr. Wynn is arguing for is a minority rule that some official action has to be taken in addition to the filing of the report.
Sir?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry, it's a hard medium. On Wilson, though, the law in Alabama is it's a qualified, not an absolute privilege. Isn't that correct?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
So actual malice
can defeat the privilege in Alabama.
So the stakes are a little different. The balancing is different in Wilson than it would be here, where in Nevada it is an absolute privilege that you're claiming.
It is a qualified privilege, but it's also a qualified privilege here, not with regard to actual malice, but the requirement the report be fair and accurate.
Sure.
You know, the question of whether or not the privilege applies, I think, is distinct from how can the privilege be pierced. But Your Honor is right. I mean, there is a lower protection in Alabama.
Mr. Bowman, this is Hardesty. I did also want to focus on Section D. And the sentence that I had a question for you about is the sentence you've been referring to. The filing of a report by an officer or agency of the government is an action. It seems to me that it could be argued that the receipt of a statement by a complainant, by a police officer, for which there is no follow-up action or report by the officer, is what that sentence is focusing on. Would you agree? Why would it extend to a situation in which the complainant walks into the police officer's station, files a report or a complaint against a fellow citizen, and the office takes no action or files itself no report?
I think, Your Honor, it does apply if the police office or the agency doesn't take action, because the protection is for the filing of a report. It's important to know what the government doesn't do as well as what the government does do.
Well, that was part of my question. The language in D does not address the subject of inaction by the government, only action by the government. And so it would require one read into it some inaction. If I accept Mr. Bice's, and I have no reason to dispute it, characterization of the way Metro handled this, the email they sent and the public release they distributed, by and large, it would seem like most of what Metro did was inaction. They received a report as a courtesy. They represented, at least, that they were going to send it to Chicago and did nothing further. I don't know. It seems like it's a bit of a stretch to suggest that what that record shows constitutes a filing of a report by the officer or by Metro?
Your Honor, I think the analogy can be made to subsection E or comment E of the restatement. Mm-hmm. It says in the context of judicial proceedings, there also has to be an action. And this court and courts around the country have rejected that as an older view. The modern view is that the requirement is the filing of the complaint because that starts the proceeding. And the reality is that people understand the difference between a complaint and proof. And the filing of the complaint, or in this case, the taking of the complaint by a police officer and the recording of that, sending it out a press release, providing it as a public record, and stating that it was going to be sent along to Illinois, even if one requires official action, that should qualify. The case that the minority jurisdiction that Mr. Wynn relies on, Massachusetts, there was a decision by the Massachusetts Supreme Court this winter, Butcher versus the University of Massachusetts, that took the minority position, recognizing a disagreement with Whiteside, and saying that anonymous accusations without a subsequent response by police are neither official statements nor official actions cloaked by the fair report privilege. Mm-hmm. Essentially, his position, the Massachusetts court took the minority. But it then went on to say that even under that narrow rule, if police take some action or some official response, that confers a privilege. And moreover, quote, once the privilege attaches, it extends not only to the police response, but to the underlying accusation as well. So our position would be the more modern position under the restatement in sister courts around the country, and frankly, in the three of the four decisions of this court, have applied the privilege to preliminary filings, to civil complaints in Sahara Gaming and in Lubin, and a declaration that had not yet been responded to in the Adelson case. The modern view is that simply the filing is sufficient to invoke the privilege. But even under the minority view, reflected in Massachusetts in the Butcher case, once the police do something, that brings the privilege into play for the underlying complaint.
So you, based on that analysis, you would advocate that we adopt the Butcher rule?
No, I think that my point, Your Honor, is that even under the narrow view, the privilege would apply here because the police did something. I think this court has historically taken a modern approach to the privilege in recognition of the importance of public discussion of what government does and has applied the privilege to preliminary complaints in the civil context and has followed jurisdictions like D.C. that applies it to complaints in the criminal context. And so our argument would be that this court should accept a modern view of the privilege, recognize that it applies to complaints filed with the police. I cite Butcher only that even under a narrow view, in this case, given what police did, the privilege would still apply.
Mr. Bowman, Justice Perrier here. You're down to about a little over 4 minutes. Can you address Mr. Bice's point that even if a privilege did apply here, the privilege was abused and it wasn't an accurate or complete recitation?
Absolutely, and thank you for the question. Mr. Bice used the word exculpatory. And frankly, that's a conclusion rather than a fact. The important question with the privilege is, was the allegedly defamatory allegation fairly summarized? If it was not, if there was material that was contradictory to the defamation itself, if the report elsewhere said, actually, I made all that up, my allegation of rape was false, if that was omitted, and there are cases cited in the briefing where that happened, the Chavon case where there was a government report, an FBI report, about an incident that could implicate mob ties. And the news reported about that incident without reporting that the report cleared, essentially, the person they reported about. If you have that sort of thing, if it is truly exculpatory, it's not fair and accurate. We don't dispute that. If what's omitted, and I pause over the word omitted here because the AP report didn't omit the birth or the child. It mentioned both. It simply didn't use the verbatim words from the press, from the police report, but it mentioned both of them. But if the challenge report doesn't include
excuse me, sir, the press report, this is Justice Pickering, I apologize for interrupting you, but the police statement said nothing about a child being born in a gas station, the product of rape. And so the lead-off sentence in the AP story is alluding to information in the complainant's statement to the police rather than the report that the brief public statement that Metro made, which is that they'd received the report and was barred by statute of limitations from pursuing it. I'd like your comment on Mr. Bice's point that the child being cited as the product of the rape lends credibility to the idea that the rape occurred, and making the omission of all the arguably fantastic additional information in that statement a problem with a fair and accurate report. It's a fair report.
You're right, Honor. I'm sorry.
Go.
You're right, Your Honor. The statement about the child came from the actual document that was produced by the police. I think it's Joint Appendix 102 and 103 is that record. That was the report that the police took down. And, you know, certainly that was the fact that there was the child born, allegedly. It turns out that may not be true. That was included in the AP report. I agree that that was part of the record that the police produced under the Fair Report record. But the alleged defamation relates to the rape. Something going to the credibility, which is the language this woman used in describing the childbirth experience, is not exculpatory. It goes to credibility. And saying that a journalist, a news organization, always has to quote verbatim everything that could bear on credibility would essentially eviscerate the privilege. The report did summarize in a 13-paragraph report summarizing two police complaints. It fairly summarized what was in the complaints, and it accurately summarized the allegation of rape. See, I have 10 seconds left, so I'll rest there unless there are additional questions.
I have a question, Chief, if I might, to both counsel. I just want to confirm.
Yes, Justice Hardin.
Thank you very much. I just want to confirm the subject matter of the stipulation you made in district court. This was an anti-SLAPP statute, or motion, I should say, dismissal. And the stipulation seems to resolve the first prong of the analysis that would otherwise be considered under the anti-SLAPP motion, that is to say, whether this is a communication of general concern or of public interest. You appear to have both agreed that it wasn't necessary for the district court to assess that prong and instead move to the second prong. Is that a fair reading of the stipulation and what you intended by that? I mean, if this court were to affirm, for example, it doesn't seem to me to make sense that one would still need to be addressing the first prong of the anti-SLAPP statute. I don't know. Mr. Bowman, what was your intent on this stipulation as it relates to the prongs within the anti-SLAPP statute?
I think you read it correctly, Your Honor. I think the parties, well, certainly the AP made the argument that prong one, you know, there was no dispute from Mr. Wynn that this was a statement made in direct connection with an issue of public interest in a public forum. And Ms. Garcia-Cano submitted an affidavit explaining that she had no reason to doubt these records that she received from the police with the victim's name redacted. And in discussions to avoid a potential dispute over whether discovery was needed for the two bases on the original motion for prong two, that the plaintiff couldn't show a likelihood of success both under the privilege or for lack of actual malice, the plaintiff argued it needed evidence on actual malice. We agreed that no evidence was needed on the privilege, and therefore the plain text of the stipulation was that the privilege question was simply a question of law, and I think was always understood to be prong two, with prong one not reasonably disputed.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bice, we'll add 2 minutes to your time to even up the time allocation.
Thank you. Let me address Justice Hardesty's question first. Justice Hardesty, the stipulation was that the parties agreed that the application of the fair report privilege was a question of law for the court to decide, for which there was no need for discovery. That's the extent of the stipulation. Whether or not the privilege was abused is not, unless this court agrees that it was so abused that the court can see its abuse on its face, would be otherwise a question for the jury. So on that aspect, I want to be clear. The stipulation was about whether or not the privilege applies, which is a question of law for the court to resolve without any discovery.
Let me rephrase the question for you, Mr. Bice. If the court were to reverse and agree with your argument, is there a reason that one needs to go back to the district court and assess prong one?
Prong one, Justice Hardesty, is whether or not there was, as I understand your question, whether or not the reporter, I think that's tied into the malice issue. I don't disagree that it's a matter of public concern, but in this particular case, you know, counsel said that the reporter submitted a declaration establishing that she had no reason to doubt the accuracy of the statements. We certainly disagree with that. We think that there's evidence in the record, and primarily coming from her own declaration, where she has cast substantial doubt that she believed these allegations at the time she reported upon them. In fact, in her declaration, she makes the assertion that notwithstanding her knowing subsequently all of the facts about Ms. Kuta and these allegations, she still claims to this day to not know that they were false. And we obviously think that casts substantial doubt upon the veracity of her claims. So, no, coming back down on remand, I don't think that there would be an argument that it's not under a public concern. Truth or falsity, however, and whether she knew it was truth or falsity, will be hotly debated. If I could, then, I'd like to use my limited time to turn back to the issues. And Justice Hardesty, this comes back to your question to me, which I don't know if I answered it sufficiently clearly for you, about comment D to the restatement. No one is saying that they can't report on police inaction. That's not what this is about. They're not reporting on police inaction. Instead, they took a statement that was just a naked accusation with no official police or government action based on it and simply reported it because it was profiles of law enforcement, as they said, and they don't deny it today. Unless it gets thrown in the trash, it somehow becomes an official proceeding. And that really should not be the law in Nevada. And again, they're misquoting to you when they claim that subsection D deals with police reports. None of the cases that they cite, and they throw around the word majority, minority, I would submit pretty loosely, because in response to Justice Kasich's question, I don't really think she got a clear answer about all this majority rule that the AP wishes existed. They gave an example, I believe, of one case and then an Alabama case. The restatement actually in subsection D is talking about official reports generated from some governmental activity. Subsection H is what deals with police reports. And contrary to the representation, I'll just read it to the court. What the statement actually says is, on the other hand, statements made by the police or by the complainant or other witnesses or by the prosecuting attorney as to the facts of the case or the evidence expected to be given are not yet part of the judicial proceeding or of the arrest itself and are not privileged under this section. Counsel asserted that subsection H is dealing only with these sort of generic off-the-cuff statements by law enforcement. That is just simply not the case. The statement deals expressly with this concept that a written statement could somehow be privileged and rejects it. And it rejects it even in the context when the government makes an arrest of someone based upon the statement. So let me then turn to this last issue. Counsel says, well, you know, there really was no omission. The question for the court is very simple. was the defamation enhanced by what was in the, or what the AP omitted in its reporting? And the answer to that is absolutely yes. And a finder of fact could so conclude. There's no question that the significance of the child is the corroboration which makes the allegation of rape all the more inflammatory. A child out of wedlock, and they omit how that child, that the fantastical story which shows that that child isn't in fact real. I'm out of time. Thank you, members of the court.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the briefs and oral argument from counsel. This matter will stand submitted and will be in recess until the afternoon calendar.